Could you speak, you were talking about in your previous career, you were at the national level in Cameroon. So when you started here, the international venue, a crime scene that takes part across a whole country with people who then fled internationally. So you were, when and now, I believe a large portion of your job has now become not just investigator, but negotiator. Hmm. Could you speak to that in these negotiations with countries that you now undergo to some degree?
Yes. Well, most of our targets, most of our fugitives have been arrested. But we still have, at the beginning of the last year, really we had 18 left. We had 18 left in the, they screened them down anyway, because as I said earlier, in 2003, the Security Council came up with a resolution 1503 and said, hey, the tribunal ends on all investigations, initial investigations must end by December 2004. All trials at first instance must end in 2008. And of course, all appeals by 2010. So by 2010, you should shut the doors and go off. In 2004, when we stopping investigations actually didn't mean stopping investigations per se, but stopping investigations on new cases. We had to complete the work that was in, that was the backlog of work, and the prosecutor took the step of convening a workshop somewhere in Arusha, in Kenya, in Amboseli, and we reviewed the workload. We reviewed the cases that were outstanding. We reviewed the files and determined which ones we could keep and how far we had advanced with investigations and what were the possibilities of getting material to indict. The list was still quite long, pretty long, but they had to cut it down in two shades. There were those on whom we were investigating, but on whom we're not gone too far. No indictments were done. The prosecutor decided that those cases could be handed over to Rwanda because it is their duty to investigate. He hadn't yet taken a position. There was no indictments. There was no warrant of arrest on anybody. So those were still in the initial stages. Those ones would take off. On all those that we had sufficiently progressed with investigations and there was a possibility of getting an indictment, those ones were retained. And some, of course, had already been indicted but not arrested. The challenge of getting an arrest or identifying those people is the most enormous thing. You can imagine today, this year makes it 18 years since the genocide took place. We've been on the ground since 96-97, effectively since 97. And this operation Naki East I mentioned earlier took place in 97. A lot of people were arrested, about 10 people in Kenya. I would give you a striking example of one person who was missed on that occasion and who to this day has not been arrested. And yet, at the time, the investigators and the team knew where he was. He was able to beat the Kenyan police, I would say because we don't have the power of arrest, but we provided sufficient evidence. Of course, we've come to know with time that he was tipped off by somebody, and that has been one trend. So here we are with a fugitive whose location we know, with a country which cooperates with the tribunal, but in that particular one case, would not cooperate, or at least gives the impression of cooperating, but it's a double language. because its own structures and elements do not plead in favor of that particular case. It's a case which we can mention easily because it's the only case that has been cited at the United Nations, at the Security Council. It's Felicien Kabuga. Then we have others who've used all techniques possible to dissimulate themselves, to change their names, to change, we've not known whether any have gone through the process of a disguise or do any surgery, not yet. But they've changed names, taken names of others, taken names of dead people, taken names of brothers, and they are virtually on the move every day. And we're supposed to go after them. The ICTR doesn't have a law enforcement branch to do an arrest, so we rely on countries cooperating to do the arrest. Article 28 of the statute creating a tribunal calls on every country to cooperate with the tribunal. Unfortunately, most of the countries don't do so on initiative, because their duty to go out to look for the persons and see where they're on their territories and cause the arrest. They don't do it, and so our tracking team has to go out to locate these people. Now, they may have reasons for not doing it. I wouldn't want to blame anybody fully. Some of them lack resources, some of them say they have other interests than looking after fugitives. Others cite their own legislation and things, erroneously, I would say. But now we are forced to go into the process of reminding those states from time to time. We don't just go anywhere. We to reduce the movement and to be focused, what we do is the tracking team does the work up front, tries to locate these people. And once we know where they are, the prosecutor's office or the prosecutor himself takes upon himself to address indictments of those persons located in that area and warrants for arrest to the government and seek their cooperation. We have learned from experience that if these things are sent by the post and they arrive, they land on the table and they're shelved. So a human body has to move along with the males. And the duty which a prosecutor takes upon himself, or most often sends us, my colleague here and myself, and sometimes he leads the delegation, is to go to each country, to the sensitive departments, and most generally is the Department of Justice, in the Internal Security, or Ministry of Interior, which supervises the police and law enforcement, and of course down even to the operatives, who are in charge of investigations, criminal investigation departments, or whatever the case may be. So we try as much as possible to deliver these mails and sensitize the authorities on what we expect of them and remind them of the role they're supposed to play to get these people arrested. Quite often, they're attentive, but most often we have to remind them. Some evoke the issue and question of extradition. There again is a weakness, because they misconstrue or misunderstand or want to rely fully without researching the role they are supposed to play. As members of the United Nations, a decision taken by the Security Council is binding on all of them. And it says they should arrest and transfer. It shouldn't say she arrests and extradite. So we have, on many occasions again, to explain to some of the eminent jurists that we are not talking of two different jurisdictions. We're talking of one competent jurisdiction for the tribunal, which is the territory of every country member of the United Nations. So once somebody is arrested in any country and has to be taken to the tribunal, is moving him from one part of the jurisdiction to another part of the same jurisdiction, which sometimes has been difficult to convey. But we don't stop at that. The prosecutor has taken upon himself to send people through, send his own lawyers to explain to the different jurisdictions concerned. Some are very becoming, some are non-becoming. But at the end of the day, we prevail because the transfers are done. Recently, for instance, somebody was arrested in Germany. It's taken 1 year. It's gone through the national processes, but at the end of the day, he's been transferred. Most of it may not even be dependent on the country. It's defense lawyers, the lawyers of the accused, the fugitives, who want to use all instruments possible to deter the transfer of those persons to the competent jurisdiction of the ICR. But the cooperation has been going. In some cases, we meet with success. In some, we do not. But many institutions are helping us. The Americans, under a special program known as the Rewards for Justice program, has put in place a bounty of $5 million, which is not for one fugitive, for the number of fugitives we have. 18 of them we had at the beginning. We paid progressively to, depending on the complexity or the difficulty of location and the quality of information received from each source, they paid a portion of that bounty. But the American War Crimes Office is helping in that area with this bounty, Rewards for Justice program. So from that area, we count on their cooperation and using their offices to sensitize and even to open a way for us to meet with certain authorities. Of recent, really, we were in Washington to visit the office itself. Even there, we also met with the Department of Justice. And of recent, we've been going around most of the countries within this region where we think the fugitives are. Now, in some cases, really, cooperation, they may be willing, I must say, they're not cooperative so far, but the fugitives choose a zone, a location, which is difficult to access, which is a war zone. Like in the Congo, we know of a few fugitives who are in eastern Congo, but as you may follow in the news today, there is still war in eastern Congo. It's a rebellion in eastern Congo. And these people find themselves within the structure of a front, FDLR, which is also seeking certain rights in Rwanda. And they don't want to come home. So this is also an area of difficulty for us. With the case I mentioned earlier, you have some people who've lived in certain areas who use corruption, really, to maintain themselves where they are. So it's difficult to get them. We find some who are actually well-drilled in relationship. They create easy relations, and they can move away. Some even are where they are, and in hiding, we can't get them. But they locate their families in the West as refugees. They gain status, and they hope that someday, when probably the tribunal is closed, those families will move over in the process of regrouping families and probably escape from the arm of justice. But we don't seem deterred by that. We think that we shall put into practice and use as much as possible of the resources and the time and techniques we've gained to get as many of them arrested before the tribunal closes down.